Hello and welcome to episode 6 of season 2 of The Last Team on Turf.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Well, Noam, the League's Cup is over and the Revs are out. What did it all mean?
What is the League's Cup?
I'm still not sure. I think it's the Mexican League and MLS in some sort of World Cup style tournament that no one's quite sure what it means, what it counts, and what it's worth. So what did you take away from it?
I think I'm convinced that it was designed for a big world introduction to Messi at MLS. He's been the star of the tournament. You know, I didn't really care so much about it until Messi started scoring 2 goals a game. Not just goals, but golazos, free kicks, volleys, helping out with assists. So I think that's it brought a lot of attention to the competition. And then I wanted the Revolution to make it through the tournament just to play Miami and Messi, just to be able to see that. Maybe the game would have been at Gillette Stadium.
Right. That's the one thing that got me a little bit into the tournament as the Revs made it to the second round was, well, if they keep winning, they could see Messi in the semifinals. That game could be in Gillette, theoretically. So there was something to play for. Although, you know, from my point of view, the Revs had a lot of momentum heading into this game in the MLS regular season. They had only lost once in 10 games. They were in second place. They beat Atlanta pretty easily. And DC United, they beat 4-0 in just an absolute thrashing at Gillette Stadium. And then all of a sudden, the curtain came down for intermission for the 2023 MLS season. I think the Messi theory is a good one. It gives Apple something to sell for the TV package. And my other theory that I just want to put out there is this getting MLS fans used to a midseason break, maybe a preview of what it would be like to switch over to the world calendar?
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
Right. So most other leagues start in the fall, might have a break around Christmas, New Year's, kind of a midwinter break, and then pick it up again in the spring and then have the summer off. MLS has resisted that, and there are a million reasons it doesn't make sense, but otherwise, this break in the middle of the season, it really interrupted all the flow and positive energy that the Revs had going their way, all to chase this trophy that's completely meaningless to the fans, I think. And the game seemed to lack a certain amount of energy until late in the second half, where it was like, all right, well, maybe we don't want to go to a penalty shootout, since even the first round games were decided by shootouts. So I don't know. I struggle to see what it was all for.
It was an odd tournament. And when it was first announced, I just thought, oh, this is some money-making scheme. Who's really interested in this? Why would the players want to play all these extra games? And if you make it all the way through the tournament, it's like 6 or 7 more games, I think, for the players. That's a lot on top of a season. Just for this one tournament, as you mentioned, really, what's the point? It reminds me of Superliga back in the early 2000s, which the Revolution won once. I think it was actually their first trophy, perhaps.
Right, and first and only, maybe? Or the Open Cup?
They won the U.S. Open Cup then, too. So that was another one that had more legitimacy. But who remembers the Superliga after all that? And it's interesting, although who cared at the beginning, but it's eclipsed the U.S. Open Cup. I haven't heard about that in a long time. it's eclipsed the Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League, which in theory should really be the big marquee tournament, but you don't hear anything about that.
Right. So, that's what this should be, but it's not, right?
So it's not, though. I did go to one game. I went to the first Revolution game of the tournament, and it was a fun experience. I got to see another team that I would never see. It was a little bit different. The whole vibe of the game was different. The whole ceremonies and everything around it was different, such as the national anthem timing and walking the players out, the soundtracks and everything. So it was a different experience. But again, I think it comes back to Messi. Messi started off the tournament making it legitimate just by his presence on the field.
That's for sure. And he's lighting up the league, but I wonder, how much of a test is this? You know, MLS games are pretty competitive. I'm not saying that Messi's not going to score two goals a game in MLS regular season games, but these games almost have a little bit of an exhibition feel to them. So I'm not sure that it's a true measure of what he's going to be able to do on a Saturday night when Miami is playing, you know, Philadelphia on the road. I just don't know. And you know, that sort of, you know, gets back to that question, what is this tournament all about? And if you do win, and let's say Messi and Miami do win this tournament or make it pretty far in the final, that's suddenly six or seven games that he's played that aren't even league games yet. And when you bring it back to the Revs, in just their four games in the tournament, they seem to pay a huge cost in terms of injuries, in terms of off the field activity. So, you know, on the injury side, Carlos Gil took a bruise. He missed a game. Gustavo Bow, another injury after just coming back from injury. He's out. Brandon Bye out for the season with an ACL. And Bobby Wood picked up a knock too. So that all happened on the field. Off the field, Bruce Arena is suspended for, we don't know what, conduct unbecoming of a head coach or whatever it is. And the team superstar, Jordi Petrovic, the goalkeeper, now looks to be moving to Europe for, call it, double-digit millions of dollar transfer fee. I think I saw somewhere between $8 and $14 million, which would be more than they got for Matt Turner. So they all of a sudden, this momentum and positivity that the Revs had built into the regular season and looking to carry that momentum maybe towards a deep playoff run is just evaporated. It's gone up in smoke.
The tournament came along, and getting back to your earlier point about interrupting momentum in the season, here they are with a lot of things having gone wrong and some pretty challenging dynamics now momentum-wise. Like you mentioned, the head coach, Bruce Arena, potentially not coming back to the Revolution even. We don't know. Hopefully he'll be back. But that's got to have an impact on the team, and while not related to the tournament, just the timing of this all comes together. Brandon Bye, like you mentioned, and other injuries. So it is an interesting time for the Revolution. And I want to point out injuries too, which have been building at Gillette Stadium generally. That's two Revolution players now that have gone out with season-ending ACL injuries at Gillette. There was a Miami player in the Miami regular season game recently that went out with an ACL at Gillette. And in the ASL match, which was the game I went to for the League's Cup, the goalie went down with, apparently what I read after, was a bad Achilles tendon injury on a non-contact play on the field. So I think that's another shadow, if you will, over this team and over the playing conditions at Gillette.
It feels like every time we go to the game now, someone goes down with a non-contact injury, is lost for the season, and you have to look at the turf as a possible cause of that. The NFLPA, the NFL Players Association, put out a report showing that in the vast majority of seasons over the past 20 years, more injuries have occurred on turf than on grass. And it's hard to understand why the teams continue to play on grass when, you know, obviously they have an investment to protect, and I don't know if it's a cost issue, a consistency issue, or what it is, but you know, we named this podcast The Last Team on Turf because we're convinced that the Revs will be the last team in Major League Soccer to get a grass stadium, a permanent grass field, and that looks like it might end up coming true. But I don't know what ownership needs to see to switch over to a grass field, which it's not just an MLS issue, by the way. It permeates all the way on down to high schools and middle schools and elementary schools that have turf fields now.
Right, right, for a lot of players. And I'll also point out, I think it was the ASL game that Gustavo Bow went down with a non-contact injury at one point. It looked kind of like a turf toe type of incident. Nobody around him, and it looked like it could have been really bad. Thankfully, he was able to continue playing and seemed okay from that. But even just another example, when you ask, what does management need to see? You know, this is the future of the team here, and the season is being lost to what could be the turf. You know, statistically, maybe it could happen on grass too, but something seems a little bit off.
Thing that seems a little off, and this is another takeaway maybe from this tournament, but and thanks to Revolution Recap for this statistic, but in the Revs' last five penalty shootouts, which they've lost four out of those five, opponents are 24 for 27 at converting penalties. And that's just, I'm not sure what to make of that, because Matt Turner and Jordy Petrovic have been two of the best at stopping penalties in the course of the game, but apps have gotten absolutely nowhere in shootouts over that period.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. You had brought up that statistic earlier and was thinking about what could be the cause of goalies having more trouble with penalties in the shootouts. Because in some respects, it feels like there's more pressure on the players who are shooting the ball, with everybody watching and the fate of the game literally like on the line with every shot pretty much. There's so much pressure there, and you can see that often even in the World Cup, players will sky or miss or have challenges dealing with the pressure. It's a situation no player really wants to be in. My thinking was that maybe the players who are shooting just have more chance to get into a rhythm. They can get a little bit of a break between the run of play, and it makes it just that much harder for the goalies to keep in rhythm with what's going on the field. And maybe it's just a little bit easier for players to get that ball into the net.
Yeah, I like your first theory a lot, that all of the pressure is on the shooter. And it's pretty rare where someone would blame a goalkeeper for a penalty shootout loss. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Whereas in the game, in some sense, it's more meaningful if you can stop a penalty, because it's such a big momentum swing, where in a shootout, it's just one after another.
So if you're thinking that with more pressure, the players are putting more thought into the shot and are strategizing a little bit more about where to place it, have more time to think about it?
I don't know. No, I was more like the goalkeepers maybe relax. Not that they're relaxed, but they know they're going to guess. And they know if they guess right, they still don't have a great chance of saving it.
We've seen it a couple times, right? I remember, this tournament, even if it's lacking in meaningfulness, certainly Matt Turner against New York City FC in the playoffs a couple of years ago, where I'm not sure he saved a single penalty from New York.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And certainly going into those penalties, I thought, okay, if the Revs were able to tie it, Matt Turner's going to get us through.
Right.
And New York all had great penalties, so I don't think there was really anything Matt Turner could do on those.
Right, that's the thing. It's not the goalie's fault. And I don't have the numbers on this, but I would guess if you looked at the regular season regulation time penalties, that the Revs probably had one of the highest penalties saved percentages, Revs goalkeepers. Well, Leagues Cup generally didn't go well for the Revs. I did want to highlight a couple of good things I thought happened. We got a couple of players back from injury, Nacho Heal, Tommy McNamara, although I don't think he got on the field, was maybe on the bench once or twice, or certainly back in training. I thought Ian Harkes looked good. Esmir Baraktevich, the Milwaukee Messi, got his first goal with the senior team, and it was an absolute cracker, just a brilliant goal.
And the affectionate name Milwaukee Messi came from Henry Kessler, Revolution defender, who's also out for, I think, most of the season with an injury.
Right.
But it's a goal that, if you haven't watched the highlights from the League's Cup tournament, it's worth watching and looking up the goal from Esmir. Just a stunning, how else can you describe it, but a Messi-like play, taking a great pass in stride, turning, firing a volley in stride. It's really one of the most stunning goals I've seen recently. And he's just a teenager.
You know, I think we were texting during the game, and I was saying, the offense was really stagnant that game and having trouble creating chances. Why don't they bring in someone like Esmir Baraktevich, who's more creative and seems to be good at distributing the ball? And he hasn't seen a lot of minutes since very early in the season. And most of his time, he's been lighting up MLS 2, or whatever they call the second division, but with goals and assists, but he hasn't gotten a ton of minutes with the senior Revs team. And that's been a little puzzling to me. He plays a little bit, I think, the similar position to Carlos Heal, so you don't always need him out there, but Heal's injured often enough that it would seem like you could slide him in there, because he is that type of player and he's very confident. And I'd like to see them play him a bit more in the last half of the season here.
Well, maybe we just need more off-day tournaments to get the players some more playing time.
more meaningless exhibitions, you mean?
Right. Well, they might be meaningful for Esmir anyway, and for Marc-Anthony Kay over from Toronto has been doing really well. So I am curious to see where the team picks up in a couple weeks.
I will say the roster moves this year have been much more effective than the roster moves last year, where nothing they did seemed to pan out from a signing players and trades and whatnot.
Eric, I could use a reminder on signings from last year. I'm thinking the player from Iceland, Tristason, but I think that was the year before when he first joined.
That was the year before. So last year was... they signed that guy from LAFC who never even practiced with the team because he had some kind of long-term injury that made it prohibitive for him to even do that. A couple of them are still around. Omar Gonzalez is still here.
Altidore.
They finally shipped Josie Altidore out by kind of mutual accord. Who else? I feel like there was one or two more.
Yeah, so you raise a good point that the players that they brought in are making the field almost immediately and even competing for starting positions. And some of the players that were injured before are coming back, like Nacho Heal and
McNamara. I mean, McNamara probably started almost every game in 2021 and 2022, and he hasn't played this year. And so just the new players they brought in, whether it's this, Marc-Anthony Kay or Dave Romney has been just total standout in the back line, done terrific.
That was a great signing, correct?
That was a great signing. They've really done well on that front. And I think that's why, despite all the injuries, they haven't fallen off in the standings. In fact, I think they're kind of sliding up, moving up in the standings a little bit, climbing up, not sliding up.
In the meantime, some old themes come back to haunt us as fans. So I was there at a game recently, and with a friend of mine who hadn't been to a Revs game before, and we sit down, and the first thing he says when he looks up, he said, "Is that a headless jersey?"
Oh no.
So for those of you who listen to this podcast know we have this running theme about this inflatable jersey at the end zone, one of the end lines of Gillette Stadium. Always this big kind of wrinkled t-shirt. Wondering why that's the centerpiece of the Revolution experience at the stadium. And we're not the only ones.
They're almost done with the renovations at Gillette, and it's almost like the nicer they make the stadium, the more out of place and ridiculous and, you know, flea market vibes you get from that inflatable jersey. It's just not good. It's got to go. If you ask me, would you rather they got rid of the turf field or the inflatable jersey? Which one should go first?
It's a close call.
What would you say?
It's a close call. I mean, the Revolution might have an advantage from the turf field. Like, probably Messi won't want to play on that field like Thierry Henry wouldn't want to play. So that helped us against the Red Bulls.
Right.
That jersey is embarrassing.
I think I'm with you. I think I get rid of the jersey first, then go after the turf. And it doesn't. It's actually, you save money when you get rid of the jersey.
Right. I guess
the electricity and whatever.
The inflatable apparatus. Right. Yeah. Well, they certainly don't iron that t-shirt because it's always quite wrinkled.
It's never fully inflated.
The only thing with the new stadium renovation is that this Jumbotron, which isn't even the correct word for this new screen, which has been installed and now activated on that side of the stadium, which really wraps around the entire quarter of the stadium on that side, is that it now really does overshadow the jersey. People might not notice the jersey so much anymore.
So that jersey, you know, it's never quite fully inflated, which has always seemed to be a problem in Gillette Stadium. I mean, I don't know if Tom Brady's in charge of inflating that jersey or what.
I'm speechless, Eric.
Well, I think maybe the guy who used to be in charge of inflating the footballs is now in charge of inflating the shirt, and he's applying the same. You know, it says inflate to 100 PSI, and he's doing, you know, 80 PSI. That's his life philosophy, is not to fully inflate whatever it is he's inflating.
I'm just never going to be able to think about that jersey in the same way. I hope somebody from the front office is listening and really takes action on this. I think there's plenty of other symbols I feel like that could be brought. We do have the musket people.
The musket people are good. We like the musket people.
The Patriots have them. We have this new logo. Maybe do something with the logo. Could roll out kind of like even like a parade, like a big version of it that gets rolled out. That's not inflatable. That's actually made with nice materials, fabrics, and so forth that make it look like remind people of the new logo, have that be a centerpiece rather than a wrinkled UHC sticker.
Well, inflated shirt or not, League's Cup or not, the season continues, and I'm actually optimistic about how they're going to play. Hopefully they can compartmentalize what happened in the League's Cup and go back to regain some of that momentum they had before the tournament.
Well, I think there certainly will be a lot of interest, and I think more interest in the Revolution after the last tournament, actually, despite its relevancy challenges, perhaps, certainly in the league. I think it's going to be a really exciting last couple months, and every stadium that Messi plays in is going to be sold out, I'm sure. I'm sure they already are. All right, well, until next time, until the next couple of games get going, it's been good to catch up, Eric.
It's been great to catch up. We'll see you at Gillette.
Take care, and thanks for listening.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warrested and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warrested and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warriston. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution. Last Team on Turf is a production of Row 12 Media.